We're going to look at verses 10 to 31. One of the things the Bible tells us is that God is totally and relentlessly committed to destroying evil and remaking his people into the image of Jesus. I wonder, do you believe that? Do you think it's even possible that God is destroying evil and remaking you and those around you who follow Jesus into his image? Let me slightly change the question. Can you see where God is at work doing that in your life? Can you see where God is at work doing that in our life together as a church? We saw last week that Paul wrote to the Corinthians, and he writes and he starts off verses 1 to 9. It's not just an introduction. He reminds them of who they are, of their identity in Christ, that they're made and called to be holy, that they're given grace and peace, that they are enriched in every way with every spiritual blessing, and they have a certain hope that one day they'll stand blameless before God and enter joyfully into his eternal new creation kingdom. That's who they are. That's who every believer is. That's who you and I are. We're made holy in Jesus. We're called to live out who we are. We're given grace and peace abundantly. We're enriched in every way with every spiritual blessing. And we have a certain hope that one day we'll be blameless. So what Paul is saying, that statement we started off with is true. God is totally and relentlessly committed to destroying evil and remaking his people into the image of Jesus. And that's what he's doing in this church. But here's what the Corinthians need to realize. Here's the problem. They locate themselves more in Corinth than in Christ. If you ask them what their identity was, their first thing they would say is, oh, we're Corinthian. They wouldn't say we are Christian. And that's because they think more Corinthianly than they do Christianly. How does that show itself in them? Well, Corinth was a city that prized pedigree, power, prestige, and performance. They were the things it loved. The grease that kind of kept the wheels turning in Corinth was wealth, patronage, connections, and influence. It was about who you know, not what you know. It was about how much money you had, not how good you were at something. It was about how you could leverage your reputation or your family name in order to get what you want. It wasn't a million miles away from our own society, is it? And what did those things create in Corinth? It created divisions, particularly haves and have-nots. There were right sides of the tracks and wrong sides of the tracks. There were wealthy and there were poor. And here's where that division came. With the influential, the wealthy, those who had prestige and those who didn't, there was a pride and an arrogance that looked down on those who didn't have. That thought because they had, they were self-made and they were really important. That those who had power and influence or access to it had no responsibility to care or look out for those who didn't. Because a little bit like our society, they believed it was all a meritocracy. You deserve what you have, so make the most of it. Those who haven't got, well, they deserve not to have because they haven't made the most of it. That was the way Corinthian culture operated. And the Corinthians have been saved, but as yet the operating system they have hasn't been redeemed. They still think and operate Corinthianly because they've grown up breathing that air. The families they've grown up in operate on those values. The education they have has taught them that those things are true. Those things matter. The workplaces and businesses they labor in and they run have cemented all of that learning. And because it's all unseen, it's powerfully effective, and it's hard for the Corinthians to recognize how their culture's ungodliness has shaped the way they think and how they're bringing that into the church. There is too much of Corinth in the church and not enough of Christ. Let me say that is no different than for every church that has ever existed. The challenge of following Jesus is constantly reforming our mindset so we think like Jesus, not like our culture. See, our culture has taught us norms, values, priorities, and morals. I listened to someone speaking this week about the danger of people who have really strong faiths because they are indoctrinated into a way of thinking that goes against our society. I thought, isn't that interesting? Actually, what they're saying is our society can't indoctrinate them in what we as the leaders have decided is right because there's another form of indoctrination. You and I think the way we think because we've been taught from birth a way of thinking by our society. We are shaped every day in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, in our families, by the media we consume, by society's values and ideas of what normal is. You can't escape it. Let me just give you some of those subtle assumptions I think we grow up with. One of them